All right, welcome to episode one of the Muddy River Tactical Podcast. We work for Muddy River Tactical out of Platte City, Missouri, and in our opinion, we make some of the best holsters on earth. We make Kydex leather holsters inside the waistband, outside the waistband, concealed carry, tactical, range duty holsters. If you've got a firearm and you need a holster for it, we can pretty much make it. We decided to start this podcast as a way to kind of give people a behind-the-scenes look of the gun industry, the holster industry, kind of what we do, and answer questions you might have, review gear, talk about the outdoors, concealed carry, you know, things guys and gals like to do, and they might like a little bit more knowledge on. So kind of introduce everybody going around the table. Across from me, we've got my brother, the president, owner, head man of Muddy River Tactical. We got Kevin Mason.
I'm the head babysitter in charge here most days.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about you. You know, I know we'll have a whole episode later on about how you started Muddy River and where it came from, but just a little bit of background on you.
So I started Muddy River Tactical back in 2014. At the time, I was, 23, 24, somewhere in that range. I had young kids at home. I had a very good job. I worked for a medical oxygen place, which my brother Kyle, I got him a job there too, so we both worked together. Drove a DOT truck with oxygen all over the country pretty much. We went Arkansas, Colorado, Oklahoma, from Kansas City, so it was long days, day and night, stuff like that.
12-hour days, getting up at 4 in the morning.
Bare minimum, may or may not be over DOT hours at some point.
Right, right.
So that's kind of when the concealed carry boom, per se, kind of happened, 2011, somewhere in there. We grew up hunting, grew up around guns, grew up around all of that type of stuff, but never, up until that point, never really were too much into handguns. I mean, I don't remember us as kids ever really
I don't know that Dad ever had a handgun growing up. I mean, he may have, but he was more deer rifles and shotguns, and he really didn't shoot a lot. I mean, he was a really good shot, but like, to go to the range and train was not his thing. He was going fishing. I mean, he'd bird hunt a lot. I remember that. And, you know, deer hunt during season, you know, a little bit of coyote hunting, but not all the time. And definitely not training with handguns and stuff like that.
Yeah, they did the normal hunting type stuff. And I think it was maybe 2010, maybe it's 2011, our cousin and aunt and everybody, remember, they were all doing the concealed carry classes.
Yeah, yep.
And this sounds terrible, owning a holster company and even a gun shop now. But at the time, I'm like, you know, the world was maybe not as crazy as what it's turned into. I still didn't necessarily see the need for it at that time. So I don't, did you ever go to the class with them?
No, I actually ended up taking the class as part of going to college. I went to college because I thought at the time I wanted to be in law enforcement. So I was taking administration of justice classes, working armed security, doing a lot of training with the guy that ran the Kansas City SWAT team at the time. Various other trainers. So that was my real introduction into handguns and, you know, tactics with handguns was through working my armed security background. But before then, I'd never really owned, you know, a pistol, you know, up until that point.
Yeah. So they did all those classes and they tried to get me to go to them and I didn't. It was probably 2 years after that, probably 2013, where I did and started going into it. And I still remember buying my first pistol, which was a Smith & Wesson Shield, the original single-stack Shield, which kind of started the whole concealed carry single-stack game, per se. And I actually went over there to buy a coyote rifle to go coyote hunting and ended up with two guns and came home to a wife with two guns that she wasn't necessarily thrilled about. And you know how that works.
Well, it's better to ask for permission than forgiveness.
Or just one of those things that kind of worked out.
Vice versa. Which one is it, Brett?
It's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Well, seeing that's where I went wrong a few times, I guess. I think I'd have a few more guns if I went the other way, maybe.
Very good.
So now I give her shit all the time because she gave me so much crap about that pistol. Well, I used that pistol to mold the first holsters that were ever, quote-unquote, Muddy River Tactical.
So,
in 2014, and what a lot of people don't realize is I never started this to do a business. We had paid health insurance. We made good money, could work all the hours we wanted. At the time, the company we worked for was amazing. And I mean, they're still in business and still a great company, but they've had to change, you know, with the market and everything. The benefits we had then aren't the same as what they are now, just because of how
Yeah.
Everything's changed.
Yeah. And Kevin and I have both worked for a couple of medical oxygen companies, but the most recent one we both worked for, they started off as a small company, 10 drivers, whatever, not many. And they've grew into a monster where they've got 100 drivers now and kind of got more corporate and stuff. And, it's good and bad. And, there's growth is good, but, you got to grow with it. And so at the time when you started this, I was technically kind of your boss, and now the roles have flipped. And,
So when I was 17, I got hired into the medical oxygen industry, and I was never even supposed to be hired into there. Greg Cook and Jeff Anthony hired me as a, here, don't say nothing until you turn 18. And our buddy Brett worked there and got us a job there. And then I got Kyle a job there, and that was from 17 on. So that's all we ever knew. But long story short, we had a great job. I started making the holsters just for myself, no intention of leaving at all. At the time, I was working, getting home at 7-8 o'clock at night, had young kids, so it was hard. Spend half the night in the garage jacking with the oven and making my own Kydex just for me, still without the purpose of anything else. I bought a few holsters on the market, and they were either just not what I wanted, or I thought they could be better, or I bought a couple that had problems. I tried to reach out to the people, and you get a big screw you, more or less, and never get a response, or, sorry, won't even let you return it. So I just made my own, and after about 6 months, I got to the point where I'm like, okay, yeah, they're decent enough for what I want. Cool. So the guys at work, was one of the first ones. I made him a holster. He had the shield too.
Then his buddy wanted one.
I just started making them for a multitude of things. And back then, I was still learning guns. Like now, we're in it every day, so I can tell you the new guns, what this model is, everything. At that time, people would ask me, like, hey, do you have a mold or can you make one for this? And I'd literally have to Google that pistol to even find out what it was, because I had no idea. They were speaking Chinese to me.
Well, and at that time, too, for people that don't know, you're having to buy a mold for every gun.
Correct.
So if you've got a right-handed SIG P365, you're buying a mold for it. You're buying a mold for the left-handed. Are they ambidextrous?
So when we started, we started with blue guns as the first thing, which is, it's where everybody starts. So I'm not talking crap on blue guns at all, but they're not made for that purpose. So you got to tape them, you got to adjust them. Kydex, when the molds is hot, it will shrink that blue gun. So when Kydex started, it's got this huge, terrible name of, as far as fitment and tearing up your gun and blah, 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 all that stuff. It was because nobody knew how to properly make them. So they are either molding them off the actual gun, which has the same problems as a blue gun, because you got to tape off the ejection port, you got to tape off the trigger guard, you got to tape off all of that. Take the tape off after you do it to make sure it fits. Well, how are you ever going to tape one the same?
Now you've got a sticky piece of hard plastic that may or may not be the shape it should be.
It takes you an hour to prep a gun to do it, and it's still not the right way. So we did it, and then we went to, there's some different companies that make them, but they're for holster making. I won't go into the companies that make them, but they block the ejection ports off and different things like that. But these companies were still just 3D scanning them and printing them. They weren't making holsters off of them, so the tolerances were never the same. You'd have to put layers of tape on it to make the slide wide enough not to drag. You'd have to do a lot of things.
Well, and even if it is exactly perfect, there's still a little bit of extra drag that you get just from the Kydex mold into it, where they don't slide in as smooth, and it kind of drags going down the holster.
100%. And when you're doing them that style, they're in what we call taco presses. Well, depending on how much pressure it had on that press, how the condition of the foam was, they never pressed the same. They just weren't. So what you ended up seeing was, we were one of the few that weren't this way, because we kind of modified our molds to work that way for a while. So there's no molds that were exactly like ours, because we went and spent $100 on these molds and then spent 3 days modifying it to how we wanted it, which it works, but it's still not exact.
And you went one further from what I can tell. Now, I've only been here the last 6 months, year or so. So I can speak more to the new way we're doing stuff. So questioning the old way, it seems to me that you ended up buying not only one of every mold, you bought two. So you had one that was taped up and then one to try and do fitment until the point where you got all the firearms to actually test them off the real firearms. So yeah, your expense was out the roof.
The crazy part is if you go to our shop right now, which we don't use any of them anymore, but we'll never get rid of them. We'll just keep them as kind of the history of Muddy River per se. But we got probably $250,000 in molds.
Just in molds.
Just in molds. So if somebody called at the time and said, we knew we had a growth plan after we started to grow into, we didn't want to offer the 20 guns at, you know, the Glocks, and we wanted to hit a broader market and be a bigger company than that. So we never turned anybody down, but we may have to spend $250 on a mold to get a $50 holster order.
So you're doing this, and I think the big misconception I've heard, and I've heard it 100 times, and we'll get Julie on here one day and she'll speak to it, and like, but anybody that knows you, the common misconception is people driving through Platte City or that see you on the internet is, oh, Kevin Mason, he must have had a great start, or his dad gave him this money to start the company, or grandpa. It's like, can you talk a little bit of, like, you started this,
yeah,
driving a truck, using your own money to buy molds, making zero profit for a long time.
100%. And in business, it don't matter here, but, you know, we're in Platte City. It's a smaller town. It's whatever. That is the normal. You know, people come into the gun shop, and Brett can testify to this, that, you know, you hear all sorts of things, trust fund, whatever. I don't care if it's our business or what it is. All the money in the world doesn't build a business.
No.
All it does is throw money away at something. We grew up, I won't say poverty, but we grew up on the poorer side of things. We didn't have anything luxurious. You know, our parents were split.
Yeah, I mean,
our stepdad had 4 kids of his own. I mean, there's a whole lot going on there where we never went without, but we never had anything.
Yeah, and mom, to her credit, you know, it, a lot of people do it, but the stuff we did have was credit cards and stuff like that. And,
absolutely.
You know, they made long-term sacrifices to get us, you know, a basketball jersey once in a while, or
and
a
the
nice
bad
pair
thing
of shoes
is,
or, you know.
You're saying that she's probably still paying on credit cards that she would never tell us about from back then, probably.
Right. And yeah, I mean, she did it as a pure act of sacrifice, but like the conception that there's this gob of money and it's like, oh, whatever, like that was not the case at all.
No, so I'd say 2015, 2014 is when I really started, but 2015 is when I started selling to other people. And like the first one for Thuse and the guys at work, I gave them to them. I wasn't doing it to make money. And at that time, I still didn't. The craziest part about this story, and it's still funny today, and I tell people this and they're like in amazement, and I get it because it sounds the same way to me. But Judd Ward, his daughter, Brooklyn, at the time was, I don't even know, she's married now, I think. But
yeah, I believe so.
She's maybe 12, 13, and she's just an innocent girl. And she's like, well, why don't you sell them on Etsy? And I'm like, what in the hell is Etsy?
Etsy.
So, you know, I go to old Google machine here and type in Etsy, and it's a bunch of girls' crafts and shirts.
You're like, there is no market.
I'm like,
here.
There is not a chance in hell. So anyways, I'm like, okay. I just kind of blew it off. About 3 months later, she goes, well, you sell any on Etsy? I'm like, I don't think that's going to work. She's like, well, just give me one and I'll put it on there. They put one on there. I think Judd helped her put one on Etsy. That is where we sold our first holsters. And we ended up selling probably at the time, it was a huge amount of holsters. Compared to what we do now, it's nothing. But we're selling 50 holsters a month through Etsy.
So you're making 12 holsters a week. After you're working, I know you were working 60 plus hours a week.
Yes, all with my wife, and you guys both know my wife, which I also refer to, which we'll get into a later episode, as Brett's boss, but that's a whole different story. But she called me every name but a white boy as far as being an idiot, because she's like, why are you doing this? I would get home at 7 or 8 o'clock, hang out with our kids until they went to bed. They were young at that time, so 10 o'clock. I had to be back up at, 4:30?
You were at work at 4.
So I was going to bed at like 2 or 2:30, and she goes, you're a moron. Well, and granted, I probably was, because at the time, it wasn't for business.
Well, and I'm sitting there at the time, I'm like, Kevin, you know, because my fear in the whole deal is, you know, the kids are only little once, and you've only got so much time. I know there's multiple times I'm like, look, I'm your brother here. I'm saying this out of love, but make sure you got time for your family, because building the biggest business in the world is great. But, you know, not so you were able to juggle having kids, having a wife, working 60 hours.
I did that until, what was it, 2018? I finally left here.
So yeah, you had went down part-time to kind of...
Probably 2017.
Yeah, in 2017 for like 6 months.
And actually, I will give a shout-out to Rick on this. Me and Rick never... I love Rick to death, but as far as work stuff, we didn't see eye to eye sometimes because we've both been in the business forever.
Right.
You know, and so it's nothing personal.
You guys had worked together at Hellgate.
We worked together. Yeah. I knew him from when I started at 17, but the best thing he ever did is he came to me. He's like, hey, like, in a nice way, kind of pushed me out, which is what I needed because he knew at the time. So let's backtrack a second. It's 2015. The first of 2016 is when I hired our first employee, which is Matt, which Matt still works with us. He's up at the shop working right now. He is our first employee. I hired him. He was working all day. You know, I think I took a couple days off or something and trained him some stuff or weekend or whatever. He was working during the day. And then I would come home and check his stuff, ship his stuff, and then do my own stuff. So he would help me.
So
some.
You're running two shifts out of your garage.
Out of my garage. Which, you know, at the time is a Kydex, a little, you know, bake oven with Kydex and taco presses and stuff like that.
And Julie can't park in her own garage, which I'm sure she was thrilled about.
She
all
got
winter
kicked
long.
Out of her own garage, which, you know, that is a whole different story. We're just going to have to get her on an episode and let her and Brett talk for a while.
Yeah, that may be a couple. I'll take a break on that one.
Yeah. So it was just a weird, weird thing. And then I think it was 20... Maybe later that year or the first of 17, I hired, there's another guy in between there. Actually, two other guys in between there, but they just didn't work out. One guy was why I was at work was shipping holsters to his buddies and not charging people and just the stuff that happens when you're not there manage people. So their second, and I'd say real employee, because the other ones didn't make it 3 weeks, was actually my father-in-law, Bob, Julie's dad, which still works with us today, and he's great. He'd been in the plumbing company or plumbing business his whole life, owned a plumbing company. He's tired of dealing with people, tired of dealing with the business stuff. He wanted to work 6 to 3 or whatever and go home. So he's still with us today. So then I had both of them, and I think I actually had one other guy, which is no longer with us. I had three guys working full time while I was still working full time.
In your garage?
No, by then.
By then you.
So end of 2016 or first of 2017, when Bob stopped the plumbing, he had the plumbing building that he didn't know what he was going to do with.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, we really need room. And remember, Julie ran the daycare
in
part of it, and we used part of a commercial building for the three employees and myself to do holsters.
Okay.
And then my wife did daycare in half. And then that went on for about a year, and I'm like, you got to get out of daycare, not because of the daycare, just we need more room, had nowhere to go.
You're getting booted out of your own house.
Yeah, we had places to go, and she was kind of ready to get out of the daycare scene anyway, so it kind of worked out. So finally, 2018, if it wasn't for Rick, I probably wouldn't even done it that year. I probably would have waited another year, because up until then, so we're talking 3 or 4 years, I've made zero. I've taken personal money from our normal job to put back in here. So the company's still running negative because everything we're putting is to keep growing, keep better, and buy new molds.
You got to pay
guys.
I mean,
when you figure out $250,000 in molds sitting there, that don't come.
Well, and we get people to this day, and, you know, we help out people, and, you know, everybody wants a discount and stuff, but they, you know, what people don't realize is, yeah, that holster, it may look like plastic and screws, but, you know, you've got a lot of overhead when it comes into just your parts. Just, you know, you got to pay the guy to put it together. You know, so.
Yeah, and I mean, fast forward till today, we got, I don't know, what, 10 or 11 employees, and getting ready to try to hire another guy. It's just always growing, but growing at a pace where you can manage it. We never want to, you know, when we started, we'd get holsters out in a day or two because we didn't have the order volume. We've been lucky and blessed and got the volume we have now. So, I mean, it's 5 or 6 days for a Kydex holster, but in the market, I mean, that's still, there's companies smaller than us that are 3 and 4 weeks.
That's super fast. From, like I said, I'm new to this industry. I'm not new to the compliance and manufacturing industry, but yeah, that 3 to 4 day turnaround time is huge. You know, we are a little bit longer, I know, on our light bearing stuff, but, you know, we're getting all those, you know.
Yeah.
The combinations you got on light bearing is incredible, you know.
Yeah, you can never have every combination available, but we never want to turn away a customer to go somewhere else when they don't want to. You know, there's a lot of good options on the market. I'm not downplaying any other holster companies. There's some other good ones out there. But as far as customer service and just overall quality and what we offer, there's not many that can compete in the price range we're in.
Right. And another good thing you do, and now would probably be a good time to talk about it, you do YouTube videos and you review guns. None of them are paid. Glock's not paying you. SIG's not paying you. Walther, nobody. We are taking guns, the new guns. You are shooting them, doing 1,000-round reviews, and doing honest just breakdowns of the gun, what you like, what you don't. And again, they're all straightforward, which I think is a really cool thing that you do.
Yeah, it worked out good because I kind of go into a little bit of a tirade on that. But so in 2019, Brett worked for the other gun shop in town, which I think the other gun shop owner kind of knew I wanted to have guns at some point. So the other gun shop owner, which we'll get into him in another day, he's a peach. And but anyways, he called me one day and he goes, "I'm done with this shit," and hung up. And if you don't know this guy, you'd be like, "What in the world?"
But so was he mad at you? Was he done with life, or was
that's just his personality? He thinks you're gonna read through. So I didn't say anything. I didn't have a chance. He hung up on me. I'm like, okay, well, I knew him enough where I'm like, yeah, whatever. So like a week later, somebody in town goes, "So when are you opening your gun shop?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Well, Brett told me," or not Brett, the other gun shop owner told me that he's done, and he told you could open another gun shop. I'm like, "Well, no, he actually told me he's done with this shit," and hung up. So what was it, like 2 weeks later maybe? You came?
If that.
Yeah. I knew Brett from just walking in the gun shop. I didn't know him personally. I walked into that gun shop, and it was a smoky gun shop. It was just an old school gun shop.
Old school, so, kind of what do you want, get out of here, not welcoming, just kind of the...
It was a local hangout more than it was a gun shop. And a lot of gun shops across the country are like that. So he came to me 2, maybe 3 weeks later.
Yeah, as soon as I heard that you were possibly going to open something up.
Yeah, he came in and was like, "Hey, do you need help?" And I'm like, "Well, actually," and for people that know me, and Brett can laugh at this, I don't say no too many times. I'll say yes and then figure out how to do it.
Oh, I made a career doing that.
So I was so busy with the holsters, I couldn't run a gun shop, but I wasn't going to let somebody else come in the town that we're trying to build a business in and open one.
Oh, no.
And it's not even a gun shop to us. And Brett can even attest to this. It's a great local service. It's never going to be the majority of Muddy River Tactical. That's not what we want it to be. Mm-hmm. But it's a huge local service. And we've got a ton of people that have bought holsters from us for years. I mean, how many people have come into the gun shop, Brett, and go, "I got your holsters. I didn't know you were here."
Absolutely. Every day.
I mean, it's...
Every day.
It's absolutely crazy in a town like Platte City how that happens. But that is what happens. So that's where the gun shops really benefited us. But back to the YouTube, I started the YouTube because we get all these guns in, and now, you know, when we started making molds for all these, which now we make all of our own molds, which is where you come in, Kyle, on all that, as far as scanning them and CNC machining our new molds and all that stuff. We have to get these guns anyways to make sure they fit. You know, there's so many companies on the market that buy the $50 blue gun, make a holster, the blue gun fits, so they assume it fits. Well, that's where they go wrong, because I can tell you, we got $250,000 of actual good molds up there and probably another $50,000 of blue guns, and there ain't a blue gun one that fits like what the real gun does.
And I will tell you, without a doubt, we have done some of those, and you know, we're 3D scanning these guns, putting them in, and like it was one of the Ruger revolvers we just did. I scanned the actual gun, perfect, made a mold for it, test fit it, was perfect.
You came in with the blue gun to me, and you're like, "This thing don't fit," and I said, go get the actual gun, and it's a whole different deal.
Yep.
So that's another thing where the Kydex holster companies in general, including myself when I started, because I didn't know, but there's some that are still doing it and just don't realize why their stuff's not fitting the same.
Well, and that's, I don't know, it. And I don't know that they're doing it.
They're not doing it intentionally. No, intentionally, they just don't know.
I don't think, and most people, because they don't have a gun shop, they don't have access, and they can't afford. And let's be real, when a gun costs $600, people aren't going to stock $200,000 in pistols. around to have every gun. It's not feasible.
And the bad thing about that is we got this inventory in the gun shop, which is a whole different thing. But we got, I hate to even know what we got in actual guns, because now the way we do everything, we test fit off actual guns.
Correct.
So we have a whole bunch of guns that are never there to shoot. They're a business expense. So when you talk about building a company, and a lot of these guys that didn't start the way we did, like if I look back and if I didn't work full time and work 20 hours a week or 20 hours a day between the two jobs.
Right.
You can't start a business unless you're going to go millions of dollars in debt and risk everything you got.
Which you didn't do.
You cash rolled
it yourself by taking nothing.
You can't build up to that. So like people all the time, there's plenty of room in the holster market. You know, there's more. We could never, as one company, we could never do all the holsters in the market.
Oh, no way.
So I've never wanted to downplay anybody. But the reality of the situation is, especially with today's economy, it would be very hard. And even in our situation, I think we made some mistakes. We did a lot of things right along the way. With the economy difference now, I don't think I could start over now if I had waited.
No, probably not. And, you know, the other good thing, you know, back to the gun shop and, you know, having it is, you know, we get to see these pistols and we get them while other companies may be waiting for, you know, XYZ company to make a mold of it or a 100%. Plate. We get that gun as soon as we can get it.
Yeah.
I 3D scan it, and normally it's by the time the gun releases, we've got a holster ready for it on the market.
Yeah, and that's where the YouTube comes in, because I feel like it benefits both sides of the business. I never started YouTube to monetize it like what a lot of YouTube channels do. We have the guns anyways. We're already spending the money. It's not like I'm spending money on guns that we're not using. It's stuff we have to have. So there's a lot of these guns. I mean, they're Walther PD380 that we just did the review on this week that's on YouTube now. I'm a Walther fan, almost a fanboy as far as PDP goes.
Yeah. You carried that gun for a long time, didn't you?
It's in my desk at the shop. I mean, it's my favorite. If I'm going to the range, that's what I'm shooting, if it's not that. But for a lot of people, they don't get the option to, you know, whether it's finances or whatever, to go buy multiple guns a year. They may go buy one gun a year, and that's all they're going to get for maybe ever or 2 years or whatever. So for these people to go out and buy something, I felt like we owed people an honest opinion of stuff. Because if you look at YouTube in general, not that there's not some good ones out there, there is. But a lot of them, because of how they are monetized and getting free stuff from people, they may not lie to you, but you get a biased side
of
it.
Sure. You're not going to say, oh, the trigger sucks on this gun and the mag release is terrible.
Whereas us, we don't rely on them. As far as our relationship with gun manufacturing companies go, it is a straight marketing department. It's the only people we deal with. And the only reason we deal with them is to buy the guns, not give us the guns, buy the guns early so that we can have holsters ready for everybody when the guns come out.
So every gun that we have done a review on, we have bought, paid for, signed, sealed, delivered. And
yeah, you can go through our YouTube channel now. And I mean, I've been doing it, I think, a year.
Yeah, close.
Something like a year. And it's disturbing to look back on, because it's no matter what, whether it's a podcast or whatever, when you first do something, if you look at the videos now, I'm like, geez, that sucked. But you know, and they probably still suck, because I ain't a video guy. You know, I just wanted it to be an honest thing.
Well, you got the voice for radio, and I got the face for video. So
that will be a whole different conversation. But so that's why we started that, and it's worked great. And I think we're up to like 9,000 subscribers now, which in the big picture isn't much, but we're not doing it for any of that purpose. If it helps one person, that's all that matters to us, you know, and especially our local customers. How many local customers come in the gun shop and go, oh, I bought this gun or didn't buy this gun because of this?
It's getting more every day.
And that could be bad. Like that PDP.
Yeah.
We got two of them, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'm down to one. It's just...
But, you know, so what I say is kind of hurting that side of the business, but that's not the point. You know, it's the being real with people, and people appreciate that more than not. If you're on there, especially when you own a gun shop, part of it too, they think you're there just to BS them through the whole thing.
Right.
And we're never going to BS you. No different than holsters. People call and be like, hey, why should we pick you over everybody else? I get that email almost daily. Well, I'm not going to sit there and bash some other company. I'm just not going to do it.
No.
I'll tell them why, what's good about our products, but there's people that compare us and be like, hey, and I won't name blast anybody, but hey, how's your holster different than theirs? Are theirs better than yours, or why are yours better? Well, I'll tell you why ours are good. If you want ours, great, but I'm not going to bash them in the sake of earning one customer.
Right.
I'm just not going to do it.
So the nice thing, you know, about the YouTube video, this podcast, it's not a sales pitch. We're genuinely trying to give our customers and just the general public a service that we can offer them, kind of an inside the deal. You know, we've been sitting here for a half hour and, you know, I haven't went on the sales pitch about, you know, the holsters or the hats or the t-shirts. It's there. We have it. It's what we do. It's how we make our money, and we appreciate our customers. But, you know, this whole podcast, like we talked about when we started it, if we get 10 people a week that listen to this thing and somebody gets something out of it, you know, that's more power to us.
I mean, at this point, we've been blessed. We've done very well in this business. We're continuing to grow, but we're doing it in the right way. You know, there's some newer companies out there that maybe grew faster, but it's because they're throwing a bunch of money at marketing and stuff. The problem with that is every day we're gaining customers from them. For whatever reason, whether it be customer service, the holster, we have something they don't offer. But the customers that we do have, there's very few of them that we don't talk to personally, don't know us, don't. I mean, how many people come in the gun shop and we're like, I ain't gonna buy it anywhere else?
They can't even get me and you straight, first off.
That's a woo.
I can see. Yeah,
I need to work on my beauty skills a little bit, but
pretty rough.
But just being real with people is the thing. And we're not here to sell anybody stuff. We're here to offer them what we like and what works. And there's no company or nobody that wants to listen to a sales pitch all the time.
No.
This is just to help the few people that it will help. And there'll be some people like, oh, that's stupid, and that's fine.
Well, and I'm sure we're going to get some weeks on here where we're going to have some great stories. And, you know, we may not get into,
Sound anything. Like idiots and ramble on a whole bunch of stuff that don't even matter.
I guarantee you that's going to happen for sure.
I mean, it's probably already happening.
Right. So just real quick, I'm going to interject because I should have done this 10 minutes ago. So for the people who don't know us and want to find us or want to see our holsters, we got muddyrivertactical.com. They can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, or whatever it's going by now. But we post, you know, quite frequently on all those platforms.
Subscribe to YouTube, too.
Yeah.
YouTube helps us a bunch just for reaching new people, and not even for the holster sales, but I get people that call and just want a real opinion on a gun. Yeah. And if we can help people, I don't care if they're buying our holsters or not, I'll give them an opinion.
Sure.
So if you go check out our YouTube, we greatly appreciate it for sure.
Yep. So YouTube, these podcasts, we're going to post videos of us on here. So if you're driving down the road in a semi and, you know, trucking across Colorado and hearing this and you want to see, you know, kind of what's going on here, please, you know, look up the YouTube video of this podcast, Kevin shooting videos. Brett, do you want to tell us a little bit about your background, or you want to save that for another day?
No, we'll go in a little bit.
All right.
It's going to be hard to follow Kevin after that story.
That's a pretty good one.
True.
I got stories for days, buddy.
True American story there.
That's why I'm waiting to go last. I'm going to look really good when you're done.
My story is not near as intriguing as Kevin's, but I started off in the world of maintenance. I worked for a company down in Kansas City, downtown. Like Kevin said, I worked at a previous gun shop here local. I was part-time for that gun shop. I was there for years. I moved away for a job.
You were there, what, 10 years?
10 or 12 with like a three-year break in the middle, maybe, something like that.
When you went to Texas?
Yeah, when I went to Texas. And don't get me started on Texas. Well, that's another day.
That's another subject.
But when I came to Kevin and asked him about the gun shop, at first it was, we'll talk about it when we open, and then I think, like he said, he doesn't have time or necessarily want to mess with it. So I started working for him part-time, and we did that 2 years.
Yeah, I think 2021, because it sucked at the timing of the gun shop, because we got our FFL and everything. Well, that's right when the COVID crap started. Yeah. Well, any gun shop in the industry knows during COVID, the way you got guns was how good of sales rep you had. Because if you logged into any of the distributors that they deal with, there's nothing in stock. You can't get anything. So us being a new FFL
in a small town,
they're like, these guys ain't, we didn't get offered crap. So, I mean, there was a time we had what, 15 guns in the shop?
We had 5 handguns at one time, and they weren't guns that anybody wanted. And I mean, we were bringing in personal guns just to have inventory there at one point. I mean, just, it was that bad. And we made it through. And then after that, we weren't growing like we thought we should. And we were out of room. Frankly, that's what it came down to. We were just out of room in our old location.
Yeah, the location there, the old plumbing shop, was down. Anybody familiar with Platte City knows, but it's down in the commercial area. There's a tow truck company across the road. It's not somewhere where people are going to, unless they get lost, they're not finding you.
I was going to say, I didn't come up that much because it's about 20 minutes from my house, and I had to look for it every time I came up here. I'm like, well, what is it, 3rd Street, 4th Street? But, so.
And a little bit more about me personally. I'm from around here. I grew up in Weston, graduated from Weston. I live here in Platte City now, close to the shop. I think just coming in, hanging out with Kevin, working for, 2 years part-time?
Yeah.
We decided one day that we're out of room. The holster shop's growing, and the gun shop is just, we're just busting at the seams. We found a local property here in town. It took a lot of convincing. And,
he tried to get me to buy this building for like a year. And how it sat on the market that long is a whole different story.
It's a really well-known building in town. It's got a lot of history to it.
The problem with the building is, in Platte City's just not a place that has a lot of new businesses in it. You know, it's a normal small town. It's got what every small town in it. When people come through here, and this isn't tooting our own horn, but they're not thinking Muddy River Tacticals in this town.
No, they're like, there's Casey's and
Mexican restaurants. We got 3, in case everybody wanted to know, and bars and boutiques. That's what we have.
Yeah, so it's kind of something different. But the whole reason the building stayed for sale that long, because the price wasn't bad, but it's kind of an issue we're dealing with now. It's along a major road that goes through the town, and the retaining wall, which the city guys were trying to get us to fix when we were getting the permit. This was after we already bought it.
Now, when you say a retaining wall, for the people who can't visualize this, this isn't a 2-foot mortar block retaining wall.
This is like a 50, 60 yard long and 10 foot tall retaining wall.
That's a monster.
Yeah. The corner of it was separating at the time. I didn't think it was that bad at the time. And I honestly didn't realize it wasn't on our property, which it ended up being good. So when we bought it, we first bought it in, 2021, I think?
21, yeah.
It's like January, December. Mm-hmm. We had the guys come in, totally gut the place. It was an old building, totally gut the place. And it worked out because there's some cool beams in it above that nobody knew. It had old drop ceilings in it.
Yeah,
it
those just, beams are great.
Just looked terrible. And then they're tearing, because they're just going to put a sheetrock ceiling in it. They're like, well, you may want to come look at this. And there's cool beams up there. So it's super gun shop oriented and looks cool. But long story short, we built that, moved in there. Then we were going to build the holster building behind it because the lot's big enough to have another building. And we're actually going to put another building on there at some point. But the city guy's like, well, you need to get an inspection first. Or not inspection, survey.
Survey, yeah.
So we go through all this. Well, he's trying to find out that retaining wall was on us to try to get us to fix it.
Okay.
So after we got that survey, we never heard anything about it again. Right. So I knew it wasn't on us. And then they made us put in a sidewalk that goes to nothing.
Yeah, that's another story.
Which is a whole different story.
I'm sure that was cheap, wasn't it?
Yeah, whatever.
But
at that point, we just needed it done. Well, now their wall's falling, but there's been 5 or 6 people that have come into the gun shop when we were remodeling it, thinking that we're selling it or renting it or whatever, wanting to buy it because they found out it wasn't on there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why nobody bought that lot, because they don't want to fix the wall, which we're going to find out now who fixes it, but it's not on us. So that's a good thing.
So to recap a little bit where I was leaving off with, leading with that is, in 2 years' time, we went from starting a gun shop in a little bitty hole in the wall building, let's just say it that way. Yeah. Great building, perfect, nothing wrong with the building, just small. It's outgrowing. We open up, we get to buy the new property, we're remodeling, we're doing all this stuff, and then in the same conversation, Kevin's got to figure out who's going to run this gun shop. Well, I was just part-time. Kevin, it basically wasn't Kevin. He wasn't going to do it. The holster business is just exploding, which is fantastic. He said, Brett, you got to take this on. So we finally got that worked out. We started on that, and that's been, what, over two years ago, going on 2.5 years right now?
Yeah, we've been at the new building. Full time, 2.5 years, I think.
It's just been crazy. So now we have this gun shop here, and I know they keep saying that we're buying all these guns, but if anybody wants to sponsor us, you know, now may be the time. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But no, for real, it's phenomenal, and I've loved every minute of it so far. And I know that's not a great story like Kevin has, but that's my story.
Well, the cool thing about it is it all worked out, because like I said, if he didn't come, I would end up looking for him or somebody like him anyways.
Right.
So I'm the only one, everybody.
There's only one Brett. That
it worked
for
out.
Sure.
And the issue with the gun shop is, and this goes back to, like you said, people wanting, expecting stuff. I'm in some ways, I can be an asshole too, but in some ways I'm too nice sometimes. So like Brett can attest to this. If I'm in the gun shop, they will not talk to Brett to talk to me. But the reason is they want a deal on something.
Well, every time.
And the thing I didn't know until I came here, I was always under the impression that guns you made a fortune on. There's almost no markup in guns.
No, there's no money in guns.
By the time you pay somebody that's capable like Brett to run a gun shop, the market on guns alone will not. You got to sell something else. Like for us, the holsters is the saving grace. If we didn't sell holsters in the gun shop, it would be a break-even proposition.
Yeah, and
hey,
I
easy.
Think,
I'm a better salesman than that.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah. He'll sell you this pen for $75. Yeah, so you got to watch out.
Yeah, we'll work on
easy.
That on the next one.
Only
episode.
If it's used,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But no, for real, like, because I've had people since I've started here, hey, can you get me a deal on a gun? I'm like, hey, I would love to. I would love to help you out, but it's just not there.
And the reality of the situation is, and what a lot of you, going back to the perception of any business, and it don't matter if it's here or there, what they don't realize is all the cost with any businesses. You know, you start getting 10 employees and 401k and everything to take care of them. You know, you got a big expense every 2 weeks just in payroll, plus the buildings, plus everything, especially on the gun shop side. We can't support ourselves giving stuff away.
I'm trying to say I'm expensive.
You are expensive.
He's worth it, though.
He is worth it. I talk a lot of shit on Brett, but he's worth it for sure. He knows I don't want to be in the gun shop, so he's kind of got it by the...
I will say I was never as bougie as I am now. I will say in the last 2 years, you've rubbed off.
I'd say you've tarted it up a little bit, drinking wine now.
No. I'm out on that.
I got him some fancy boots finally, though.
Fancy boots finally came in. But
man, what year are those fancy boots at? These Adidas are kind of cold.
Kind of cold in here.
Year five, buddy. Year five.
Fine. All right. I'll give you the quick...
let's give a quick version of you and we'll go over SHOT Show real quick.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. So, like I said... Kevin and I grew up small, North Kansas City, Missouri. Didn't come from a lot of money. Our parents had expectations of us to do the best we could, no matter what. You know, your job.
And I will give them that. Both our parents, they never let us be halfway at anything.
Right.
You know, and growing up, you're like, man, they're an asshole or whatever. But looking back on it.
Yeah, you decided you were going to play football. You played the season. You signed up for the baseball team. You're going to finish it out. School was your job.
Yeah.
You had to get good grades. There was no doubt about that. Had to respect mom. You didn't get away with pulling anything over on either one of them. Mom, and she's going to kill us for talking about this, and we're going to have to get her on, but... She used to carry a wooden spoon in her purse.
She used to beat our ass with that wooden spoon. But, and now our kids could go do anything they wanted and get away with it.
She's got selective amnesia on the wooden spoon. She's like, I never did that. I'm like...
This is one of the nicest ladies I've met. Okay, so, you guys stop.
Hey, we're going to make her a holster for the wooden spoon because she had that thing on quick draw.
She's an old lady trying to get to heaven with the grandkids now. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm going to say about that.
But... So,
but
yeah,
I'm glad she did.
No,
put it that way.
Yeah, but I will say, mom 100% put us first all the time, no matter what. So yeah, we love you, and we hope you think this is as funny as we do. But anyway, grew up there. Went to high school in North Kansas City. Our grandpa was a captain for North Kansas City Police Department. I thought I wanted to be in law enforcement, so I started taking college classes, working armed security. And the more I worked armed security and was dealing with that sector of society on a nightly basis, in the 2 years I was doing it, I was kind of getting jaded already just by doing it and dealing with the same people every night. And that's about the time Kevin was down at the oxygen company, and I was working overnights, making no money, and, you know, risking my life and just dealing with bad stuff every night. And Kevin's like, hey, come down here, fill oxygen bottles. You know, it pays more than what you're making, and, you know, it's 4 a.m. till noon. So I went down there. I didn't give a crap about filling oxygen bottles, but it was a good job. You know, I was off by noon. We'd go deer hunting in the afternoons, go fishing, you know, whatever. So I had my afternoons off, basically, and did that for years. And I got to the point where, you know.
You went to Pure Air first, right?
No. I went to Pure Air first. So I had started.
I got you on at Hellgate.
Yeah, you got me on
at
Hellgate.
And then you got me on at Pure Air.
So I started filling bottles on the rack, and it's never ending, because by the time you fill all the bottles that are over there, here come trucks with more empty bottles. So there's never a sense of accomplishment like you did anything.
Are you the guy that can throw the bottle up in the air and stack them?
Like, no, but we can spin too, like a circus monkey.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good trick. So my boss at the time had me doing deliveries, because I was one of the only guys there that if he sent you out in the pickup, I would go do the delivery and come back and not go sit at Casey's for 45 minutes. Yeah. You know, I'd go get my shit done and come back. So that turned into being a driver. And like he was talking about our parents, like, my goal is to be the best guy no matter what I'm doing. So if I'm working in the gun shop, I'm going to say, Brett's the best guy in the gun shop. What does Brett do that makes him successful? And I'm going to emulate that. And I'm going to try and figure out how I can be even better.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Kevin doesn't want to do it.
Well, there you go.
It's pretty simple.
So, you can't put Brett on your standards list here.
So hey, I kind of took that mentality, and I was like, all right, this driver's been here forever. What does he do well? What does this guy do well? And got to the point where our driver manager at the time left, and they're like, hey, do you want to be the driver manager? Did that. You know, again, did really well at that, filled in on routes, did stuff nobody else wanted to do. And there's times where Kevin's like, look, you're getting taken advantage of. And I was like, yeah, that may be so, but I want to, you know, keep moving up in the company, and that's the only way to do it. So I was, ops manager there at, Hellgate for a while. And, our boss Jeff had left to go over to Pure Air, and, it just got bad at Hellgate, and he'd been trying to get me to leave for about a year. So went over to Pure Air, and when they had started 7 years before that,
Mike Carr, and it's funny because we had lunch with him and Rick not too long ago.
Yeah.
But Mike Carr, I remember he called me before you ever went, because Rick told him that I could fill oxygen and they needed somebody.
So I had just started at Hellgate, and Michelle, I think, was out of work at the time. And I'd only been at Hellgate like 3 months, and it was paying steady, and, you know, we had a house and everything. And Mike Carr was opened up Pure Air, and he's like, hey, come have lunch with us, come work over here. I'm like, Kevin, you know, I don't know that I can go work for a startup company with Michelle not working, you know, right now. I need something stable. This is stable. I don't know if I can take the risk. So we completely blew off lunch. Didn't think anything about it. So 7 years later, Pure Air's growing and just kicking Hellgate's ass, like up and down the block, like just destroying them. And I'm having to call the owner every day. Hey, Pure Air took another one of our accounts. And, you know, so finally ended up leaving, going over to Pure Air. And when I interviewed there, all they had was a driving spot open. And the vice president's like, you are going to leave being an ops manager to come be a driver. It's like, yeah, you guys are growing. I want to be a part of something, you know. And I'm going to work my way up, and I'll be one of your managers one day. And he's like, yeah, whatever. So fast forward, essentially did the same thing. Went, was best driver there, you know. Had people there like, oh, you're just trying to make us look bad. I'm like, man, I don't really care about you. I'm doing my job, and I'm going to do it the best I can. I'm going to go home. So went through, was in charge of FDA, DOT, OSHA, PHMSA, Missouri Board of Pharmacy, all these compliance. And if any of you have dealt with compliance, it changes all the time, and you've got all these different agencies, and
it's always your fault.
And it's always your fault, and it's a super, super high stress deal, because you have to deal with audits from every one of these companies, and, you know, IFTA mileage, and like just all the stuff that went into it. And during that course, I had a heart attack, so
super, I wonder why.
Super stressed, had a heart attack. And at the time I had my heart attack, Kevin's like, look, I'm going to figure out a way to get you here. And I was like, you know, and that's when you guys are doing your shopping, getting through everything. It's like, look, I never want to come over and make it weaken the company.
Well, the thing is, and this isn't to downplay anybody, but there's certain people that can be in the holster shop and production stuff. And there's certain people that can't. Brett, for one, cannot be a holster guy.
Nope.
I would kill him as a holster guy, and he would kill me.
Let's be honest.
We'd be wrestling like Beavis and Butthead in the back, so he's just got to stay over in the gun shop.
Yeah.
You've begged. But I said no.
But for like you, Kyle, you just had a different skill set, and in all reality, you made enough money doing what you want that I could never – it had to be a skilled position.
Sure.
To ever make it make sense. Yeah. I couldn't be like, hey, I'll give you $20 an hour and you can come make holsters, you know, that you weren't in that situation.
Right. And it actually worked out because kind of when I came over, we got the CNC machines and, you know, it was kind of like a God thing, you know, and I don't attribute a lot to the God thing all the time, but it is weird how stuff lines up. So our mom worked for Butler Manufacturing, and they did buildings, and she was always talking about drafting and AutoCAD and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So when I got in high school, the electives, AutoCAD and drafting, was elective classes that you can take. So I was like, oh, okay, well, mom talks about this and whatever, and I was always good at art. I could always draw and always had that creative visual stuff. So freshman year, I started taking AutoCAD as an elective. The teacher was an old baseball coach who taught drafting on the drafting boards, knew nothing about computer drafting. So he's trying to teach us as he's learning the system. Well, I just naturally picked it up, started doing it. And, you know, like at the end of your first year, you're supposed to be able to draw a screw with the threads at the right pitch and, you know, all the bevels and everything correct. Well, I'd figured it out in like a week. And he's like, look, don't tell the other kids, but I will give you an A. He's like, you can draw whatever you want. Just turn in something every week. Help the other kids with their problems. And you can take this class. So I took it. I think it was two, three years, whatever. As long as they would let me take that class, I signed up for it every year. Because I had the Discman at the time. You know, we didn't have the iPods. It was a CD player. I had my CD player listening to Metallica or whatever.
Well, at the time, you had no idea that you'd be making money off of this later.
No. Well, I am literally drawing like A-10 warthogs, and like I loved military planes. So like I was taking schematics of these planes and figuring out the curves.
You're over there making Harry Potter's wand and shit.
Oh yeah, like I'm doing stuff. Like I've still got the printouts, and you know, anyway. But so that was my introduction to CAD. I took a little bit more in college just because I wasn't quite sure, but I needed to burn some elective classes. So fast forward to Kevin calls me. It's like, hey, I'm getting these CNC machines.
Well, here's the funniest part about this. Talking about to me not saying no about too much stuff. Me and Brett ordered the CNC. Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
We ordered the CNC machines, 3D scanner, all of that shit. I had you in the back of my mind, but I'm like, man, I don't know how.
One of us was going to do it if it didn't work.
But. Yeah, one of us were going to figure it out. So I messed with this 3D scanner that we use now, and I could jack with it, but I don't have the time, first of all. Even if I had the brain power you have, I don't have the time. There's always... Between this normal business stuff, the YouTube, the marketing, employees, I mean, I couldn't devote the time to do it. And that became a reality real quick. So we were already $100,000 into CNC machines. We're like, well.
Damn it. I should have leveraged for more salaries what I'm hearing right now.
I think I'm going to call my brother. And Brett's like, well, I don't know, but. I'm sure we can figure it out, but it's probably going to take a while. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to call my brother.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Kevin calls me, and it's on a Saturday. And, you know, I had been looking to leave for a while, and Pure Air was great. Mike and Rick, those guys are...
But in all honesty, wasn't Michelle a little bit hesitant?
She was. And, you know, again, because I'd worked there for 10 years.
And I knew that, too, because at the end of the day, I take any employee personal. I never want to... Right.
Plus being family.
Well, that's a question I get more than anything. How's it working for your brother? I'm like, it's great. Like, I think we get along good. Like, I was his boss before, and like, he's my boss now, and there's no...
Well, the cool thing about us, and no different than Brett, me and Brett are out friends outside of the shop, and we're brothers outside of the shop. Brett was maintaining the skid steer at the house last night. You know, I mean, we hang out other than that.
Right.
You just have to have clear boundaries. I never have to say anything to Brett, because Brett knows... What has to be done.
Expectations.
It's just the expectation thing. He knows if, hey, this does not work, if this does not make money, he knows it can't go. So I don't have to babysit him.
Right.
So it's one of those things, you get what you pay for in some employees as far as accountability goes. You're no different. You know what has to be done. You know, as roles change, I mean, I've already, as far as like day-to-day employees, I've already backed out to a certain extent from that. You know, all right. The hiring, all the it's stuff easy. Is now on you now.
It's easy to just say completely.
Not quite. I haven't turned you over to him yet.
Oh.
Oh,
boy.
That's Julie's job.
Oh, yeah. Julie's job.
Yeah, I'm going to stick the wolf on you.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, so you got accountability because you know at the end of the day, I'm not the person that's never going to show up. You guys all know that.
Right.
Whether I need to be here or not, I'm going to be here. But the day-to-day stuff is your responsibility. And like what Mike Carr always said, and it's back then it doesn't make sense, but it's true. It's like the closer you get to me, the more I expect from you.
Right.
So what we expect from a guy in the shop buffing holsters is different than I expect from you or Brett.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But everybody is on that same page. It's not a thing of, oh, well, just here, no problem, you know.
And I think that's a lot of what we learned good, you know, especially at Pure Air, you know, Rick and Mike and those guys, you know, they would be out there, you know, Mike owned, you know, a multi-million-dollar oxygen company, and he'd be out there fixing concentrators.
He is out there scraping labels off of tanks.
Yeah, whatever it takes. Same thing with Rick, you know, be out running routes, doing stuff, fixing pumps, you know, all that stuff. And mm-hmm. You know, when we have guys now, they see me, you know, I'm out there running machines. I'm out there folding, pressing, heating, you know, not all the time because they don't need it all the time. But, you know, not being afraid to go out there and, you know, kind of show them that you're there to help.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. And we got a lot of young guys in the holster shop side that will take over some of that stuff as we go. You know, I mean,
right.
Bob and Joe are two of our, Bob's my father-in-law, but two older employees that are not on their way out, you know, but they're not a career guy. Yeah,
they may be done having fun one of these days.
Yeah. So, I mean, Bob may work until he's dead because he can't stay. You know what I mean? But they're not a guy that's going to be here 20 years from now. So we got some young guys that can turn into that. And that's where it's kind of cool to see is turning stuff over to them, like Instagram and stuff.
Yeah.
One of the younger guys, we turned Instagram over to him. Like, here, you know more than this than we do. Have fun.
And he's killing it because, you know.
Like, but he's got accountability too, which is kind of how it starts, like we said, you and Brett, when they have some accountability towards it, they take it differently.
Yeah, and they got pride in what they're doing and they can, you know, show their friends and be proud of it. And, you know, like I was talking to, you know, the guy that's running our Instagram now, it's like, you realize this is a pretty good sized company and, you know, for what it is, and you were in charge of one of the major social medias. That's a huge deal, and you should be proud of yourself. And and he's done good, you know, and being able to mentor the guys up and help them out, just, you know, like you talk about, you know, giving stuff to the customers, you know, making it for our employees where it's not just a job, but they can feel good about it. If they ever decide to leave, I hope none of them leave, but hopefully we can do the same thing that our mentors did, and, you know, they can go dominate and do whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're never going to keep anybody... everybody for the life, but you know, I think we got an environment that can conduce that very easily as far as we have very little turnover in the big picture.
Yeah definitely. All right, so we are about an hour in. Do we want to go over SHOT Show real quick, or do we want to save that for next week?
We can do a brief overview real quick.
Okay, so you guys went out to SHOT Show in Vegas.
Yeah,
first trip out there.
I've never been to SHOT Show, and this goes back to kind of the discussion of up until this point. You know, we've gone from, I think, maybe a year, 2 years ago, we had maybe, what, 4 or 5 employees?
Yeah, we started.
We probably doubled employees in the last year or two. So before then, not that we didn't want to go to the SHOT Show, we just never could justify the time away because at the end of the day, we're here for our customers. You know, there's some companies and even holster companies that are just for gun shops. You know, they do wholesale stuff. We're more direct to consumer. So we figure if we leave, then they're behind. So we never did. Well, this year, and we even canceled the trip. We were going to go. And then we're like, nope, we're not going to go. And then finally, it's a Friday before SHOT Show starts Tuesday. Well, starts Monday, but the show itself starts Tuesday. Friday, I'm like, hey, tell your wife we're going. Because I was going to have you go too. And I looked up tickets. There's only 2 tickets. On there and back. So I just booked them. I'm like, tell your wife we're going.
Yeah.
Well, long story short, it came, what was it, Monday we left? Yeah, Monday night we left.
Yeah, we drove.
and eventually our flight got, it was supposed to leave at 7 from Kansas City. It got delayed to like 11 something. So we're like, shit, we're gonna get to Vegas at like 3 in the morning. Well, when that happened, a bunch of flights canceled. So that's when Julie got her tickets.
Okay.
So Julie ended up going with us. But yeah, so we went out there and it was what I expected in some forms, but not in others. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's also my first time going. It's really big. Really, really big. I mean, as far as you think going into details about it may be good for the next one?
Yeah, so, we can go into details on the next one.
Okay, so one tip, and I know this is a great time for those magical pop-ups. You're going to have to give them a tip on rental cars and maybe what you should plan in advance for rental cars.
So this is where, when I booked a rental car, I thought it was just me and Brett. So, and it's Friday before the SHOT Show. So let's mention rooms that should be $80 a night are $600, $700 a night. Oh my God.
Can you imagine what they are for the Super Bowl this weekend?
Yes. Even worse. So everything's inflated. So then I get to rental car.
Go Chiefs.
Ideally, if you're going to a SHOT Show, you want to stay in the hotel that it's in so you can walk up and down and be done. If we go back, that's what we're doing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But
Convenience.
I wasn't paying $1,200 a night
for
the rooms, and the only room left was one king bed, so I ain't getting in one bed with Brett.
If we go over our rental car.
Well, that's on Saturdays.
If we go over our rental car, the king bed would have been perfect.
True. It would have matched.
All right.
So, we'll fast forward here. So, rental car, they either had like luxury SUV, which is like $300 a day. I'm like, we're driving to the SHOT Show and back.
Right.
Like, whatever. So they have the compact or something. Or
okay.
Economy compact. Yeah.
It's supposed to be a Nissan Sentra.
Uh-huh.
So I get on this little app and they're like, oh yeah, Nissan Sentra confirmed, blah, blah, blah. So we get to Vegas. It ended up being like, what was it, like 11 o'clock in Vegas or something?
Yeah.
Because our flight ended up getting back to a decent time. We get to the counter, and the lady's like, okay, yeah, I got your car. I was like, yeah, Nissan Sentra. She's like, Mini Cooper.
So you went from Nissan Sentra to essentially the Urkel car.
It's a Mini Cooper.
Convertible Mini Cooper. So it's not the full-size Mini Cooper.
So you pull on Austin Powers.
Just me and Brett, it wouldn't be so bad. But Julie's with us. We have three bags. So we go to the trunk of this thing. There is no trunk. A about 6-inch tall thing flips over. Our bag won't even fit through it. So we're like, what? Like, we're going to have to put the convertible down to get our damn bag in the back.
It was epic.
And you guys didn't take big bags. You carried on.
Yeah.
Yeah, we carried on. So I will try to put a picture of me and Brett in this thing. We ended up going to the, Hoover Dam?
Hoover Dam, yeah.
We got pictures of me and Brett at the Hoover Dam holding hands next to it because it was just that kind of car.
Oh, yeah.
You got to. I mean, you're there. So.
Yeah.
We should have kept a king bed. I'm just saying.
And then I did a skateboard slide with, quote unquote, Mini Cooper. So we're at this, we're going to Vegas from the Airbnb that we ended up getting.
Okay.
It's like 15 miles outside of Vegas because it was cheaper. So we're driving and was that the day there's somebody next to us with a nail in the tire?
It was a truck next to us had a big nail.
So nail in the tire. So he's hanging out the Mini Cooper, which he looks like a gorilla in a micro machine anyways, hanging out the Mini Cooper trying to tell this lady that there's a tire, this big lifted truck, that there's a nail in the tire. So anyways, I'm half laughing at him. In this Mini Cooper, I got to bend down to see the stoplight.
Oh my God.
So I'm bending down trying to see what's going on. I ran the damn curb over. How we didn't get high centered in this thing, I don't know.
Literally ran it over and like
you're grinding the curb.
The people behind us were sitting there dying laughing.
Yeah, it was.
I don't know if they're laughing at the skateboard slide of the Mini Cooper or me and Brett sitting in the Mini Cooper because they can't see Julie in the back. So we just look like a couple in the front of this thing.
So the first picture I get of this is Julie sitting behind Brett, and you just to drive, your seat was against the back seat.
Oh, yeah.
It was pushed all the way back.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how you fit in the front, like, your knees had to look like Gru on Despicable Me riding the roller coaster.
Yeah, we would sit beside each other, and our arms were just touching. Our shoulders were touching.
Like we could hold hands without trying to hold hands.
There's no room anywhere in this car.
Which we're not small guys anyways, so
it
doesn't make it any better.
I don't know. You guys look like you hit the gym pretty frequently.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, this is audio. Well, except for the video, so.
No, I'm gonna put him on the edit clip of this. He's gonna be the screenshot for the gym.
I'm down.
Hey, we might get gym memberships out of this.
Sponsorships, guys.
Yeah, what is this? The fitness place up the road, probably like, we need to sponsor them guys.
Planet Fitness. Boy,
if I could only eat Subway for lunch every day, it would be a lot better.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, guys, I think this has been a really good start to the podcast. I hope the people at home have enjoyed this hour. We've got a bunch of stuff we're really excited to talk to you guys about. Anybody that's made it this far, we just genuinely want to say thank you for listening. We're going to record these every week. It's free.
We're going to put them up on our website under blog post, and then we're going to put them, I think, Apple and Spotify and all that stuff.
Yeah, any place we can post it. So we're shooting for Apple, Spotify, Audible, all the big ones. Post them up there weekly. If you have questions, email us. Hit us up on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram.
And we are going to find a way to somehow weekly give some merchandise stuff away, whether it be these hats here or shirts or something, so we can figure out a way to do that.
Yeah, and you know, if you see one of these hoodies, hats, something you'd like to have, like to support the podcast, we'd love to have it. We're getting some custom shirts made.
Yep.
You can see a few of our holsters on the table. If you want to know more about them, you can check them out on the website. But guys, great first episode. Look forward to doing more with you. And for everybody tuning in, we will see you guys next week. Check us out, MuddyRiverTactical.com, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the above. And enjoy our intro and outro music by Quentin Cox, local musician. So if you like our music, check him out too. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you, everybody. See you then.
See you.